Okay, we begin here on the top of Kuf Ted Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara, you know, is continuing to discuss this premise that She'iro Za'av, that the word She'iro, later on in the Psukim, the last Pasuk in the Parshiyah of Nachalot, which is in Atatim and Nachlato, this She'iro, HaKarov Elav Mimishpachto, and we're defining She'iro as the father. So now the Gemara proposes, Ema She'iro Za'av, let us say that She'iro, which is that pasuk at the end, references to the Av. Lameid, Av kodim nabat. And in that way, we will say that the father precedes the daughter in terms of inheritance. You can see in the Rashbam, Dain akamat tachad avi alaklum. Because the daughter doesn't step into her father's shoes with regards to anything, kivno uke achiv. Like the child who steps into his father's shoes for Ya'ada, for Eved Ivri, for Steachuza, the brother who steps into the deceased brother's shoes in terms of Yibum, the Bat doesn't step into her father's shoes in any of these matters. And so therefore, the way that the Rashbam suggests over here, the way that we would order the Psukim is, Ki Yamut Ubein Einlo, if there was a situation in which a person passes away and he has no child, then you'll give his Nachlato the She'iro, you'll give it to his close of kin, which would be the father. If he doesn't have a father, then v'natatem et nachlato le'achiv, and then you'll give it to his brother. Ve'em lo achim, if he doesn't have any brothers, v'aratem nachlato le'bito, and then you'll give it to his daughter. And then after that, if there is no daughter, then you would give it to le'achei aviv, you would give it to the uncles. Ve'em en achim le'aviv, and if there are no uncles, then you'd go akarov akarov kodem, the closest of kin. So the way the Rashbam sees the question over here, the question is not solely to move the father in front of the daughter, but to downgrade the daughter completely, which is to say that the father will precede everyone except the son, because we know that the son has precedence in the fact that he steps into his father's shoes. But then the deceased's father would come after that, because he's She'iro. And since She'iro, you're moving up in the Psukim, you're saying they're out of order, we're going to move it up, we're going to move it all the way up till after the son. Then we would give precedence to the brothers over the daughter again, because the brothers step into the shoes of the deceased in Yibum. The daughter doesn't do any of that. And then only then would the daughter come into the Yerusha. So that's the way that the Rashbam views the question. Others simply view the question as maybe the father should precede the daughter, but the daughter would still precede the brothers. You don't have to go as far as the Rashbam is saying to say that even the brothers will go before the daughter, but just to say that the psukim would be in order, aside from the fact that the father would precede the daughter. Mar says, Yochol yakdim the ben. So now maybe you would think he'd go in front of the son. Talmud Omar hakarov. Karov, karov, kodem. And when it comes to closest of kin, you go to the closest relative first, and that's why the ben would be first. Now, that means that the reason the son precedes the father of the deceased is because the son is of closer of kin. He's closer of kin because both of being the son, but also because of his position in filling the shoes of his father. The father of the deceased doesn't fill his son's shoes in any way. So therefore, we know for certain that the ben is kodem the av. But now, once you've done that, maybe the bat should also be kodem the father, but you don't have anything that shows or indicates that the bat should be stronger than the father. But that's when the Gemara comes in and says, Kevan delinyan yibum ben ubat ke'adodin inhu. When it comes to yibum, a son and a daughter are of equal nature. Linyan nachala nami ben ubat ke'adodin inhu. Then in nachala, we will say the same thing over here, which is that the bat will go before the father. So now we've established that both the son and the daughter should go before the father, because then the son and the daughter do have this aspect to them where they fill in the shoes of the father, and that is the daughter also works to obviate the need for Yibum. So we learn that out, according to the Rashbam, we learn that out from the Pasuk, because it says, Ubein Ein Lo, he has no son, that's what's written in the Parshia of Yibum, and the Gemara Darshins from that, Ayin Alav, check out to make sure he has no descendants. Any descendants would be enough to stop the need for, or obviate the need for Yibum. So over there, we'd say, don't read it literally as Ben, as a male child, but ben in the broader sense of children, in the broader sense of descendants. And therefore you have to look into it to see whether he has any descendants. And a daughter is considered to be a descendant. The Balei Tosafot, they're still not sure. Even given that drasha, how do we know it includes the bat? Because we use that drasha to include a zera pasul, to include even a mamzer that is born, that mamzer would prevent the need for yibum in that case. So Tosafot says either you say that we can learn both things out of the limud of ayin alav, which is both zera pasul as well as a bat, or he brings in other suggestion, which is that the pasuk says velo yimachei shmo miYisrael, so that his name would not be wiped out. His name's only wiped out if he has no offspring. Any offspring that he has would prevent it from being shmo machoy. And so therefore a bat, a daughter, would be sufficient to protect his wife from the need to do yibum. Given that, the ben and the bat are on equal footing here, and this is the key element, as we saw before, in distinguishing the son from the brothers of the deceased, because the brothers of the deceased perform yibum, so they step into their brother's shoes. The ben was better than that because he prevented the need for yibum. His birth or his being around means that there is no need for yibum, which means that he, in essence, is stepping into the shoes of his father. And now we're going to say the same thing with the bat. If the bat accomplishes the same thing, then she will step into the shoes of her father. And in doing so, also takes precedence now over both the father of the deceased as well as the brothers of the deceased. Where it says, Ve'ema, so let us say, Shero Ze'av, Ve'mei She'av Kodum Necheav. So now, if you're looking in the Parshia, where you say She'ero references to the father, let's say that She'ero, we bump him up, and he will precede the uncles of the deceased. So, the last listed Yoresh in the Parshia, in Pasuk Yud is, Imein Lo Achim, if he has no brothers, then you give it to the uncles of the deceased. And then afterwards it says, V'natatem Nachlato L'She'ero Akarov Eilav Mishpachto. So that She'ero we're going to bump up. We've been trying to bump it up in front of the children just now. We already tried to bump it up in front of the brothers, which is where we stand right now, which is that it would be ben bat, then father, then brothers, then uncles. That's the way we have the order at this point in time. But now, what the Gemara is suggesting is let the father be inserted not before the brothers, but rather before the uncles of the individual. And again, the way that the order would be then is ben bat, brothers, father, uncles. And that would be the order of the psukim, and then akrob karob kodem after that. Yocho yakdim lachin, then you would think maybe he should also precede the brothers of the deceased. Tamalomar akarov, hakarov, hakarov karov kodem. Because the pasuk says the closest of kin goes first. And the brothers have something up on the father, which is that the brothers perform yibum, whereas the father doesn't do anything where he steps into the shoes of the son. So therefore the svara, or the logic, would dictate that the brothers of the deceased should precede the father of the deceased. So the Gemara answers to that, you don't need a pasuk to tell you that the father should precede the uncles. The uncles, where do they derive their relationship with the deceased? They come from the father. So it would make only logical sense that the father precedes the uncles, because why would you ever put the uncles before the father? Kayav, kayarte acheav? How could it be that the father is alive and the uncles are inheriting? Or in essence, what the Gemara is saying is that if you are the linchpin in associating or connecting the relationship of the parties, for instance, in this case, between the deceased and his uncles, the person that joins them together as relatives is the father. So you need a pasuk to tell you that the father should inherit before the uncles inherit? It'd be obvious. The uncles only have a relationship with their nephew because of the father. And given that, the father should take precedence even if he didn't have a pasuk. That doesn't need a pasuk to teach you that. So when you say, Natantem and Nachlato L'She'ero Akarov Eilav, that tells you that you give the She'ero some precedence over here, being in front of his brothers, I mean the brothers of the father, the uncles, That doesn't need a pasuk for that. So it must be, it's coming to tell you something else. That something else is that not only does he precede the uncles, he also precedes the brothers of the deceased. And so then that's the limud that we will come now to, which is that the order of Yerusha will be ben, bat, av, ach, and then achea av. So that would be the order of the Yerusha now, and then after that would be a karov kodem. Whoever is the closest of kin after that would be the inheritors. And that's how we get to this conclusion that the father precedes the brothers because of this pasuk. Now the Gemara asks a more fundamental question is, Vakrai lav hachiktive. The psukim don't say that. It says, dichtiv, the psukim, if you read them, say, im einachim na'aviv. If there are no brothers to the father, then, unatatim inachlato, the shiro akarov elav. The shiro akarov elav comes after the uncles. So why are you telling me that the svaro, or the logic, is that the father must precede the uncles? If you read the psukim, that's not what it says. So why don't you just say that there is some sort of gzeret ha-katuv, that the psukim believe that this is the order. Ben, bat, brothers, uncles, and then father. And that'll be the order of the psukim, even though it doesn't necessarily logical, but the psukim lead it that way, or the psukim teach us that, and we're going to follow the psukim. How do you know that you should take these psukim out of order? Or you can look at it as a more general question, which is, the father is found at the end of the list. This is the order of the list. And how are you bumping the father in front of the brothers? Forget about the uncles. Why do you have a right to move it around if the psukim are dictating that this is the order, even though it may not make sense to you? The Gemara says, "Karai shlo kesidram ktive." The psukim are written out of order. And the Rashbam explains to us, "Lo dikdeka ktu besidram." The Torah was not specific about the order, mishum desmach amay dichtiv, because it's relying on what is written at the end of the psukim, Hakarov, karov kodem, that the closest of kin goes first. And you, yourself, will then order them and figure out what the order should be, kivi kurvatan, based on how close or what their relationship is. If you're telling me now that we don't go after the order of the psukim at all, it's irrelevant what the psukim wrote in terms of order, then why does psukim in the Torah have to be written at all? Just say, you give the inheritance to the closest of kin, and that's it. Why do you need any other information? As we're going to see later on, that these psukim, we learn out all different types of limudim for them. And in doing so, each pasuk has significance in of itself, even though it's not for the order of the Yerusha. And so in the end, what the Rashbam says is, Eino Chanami, in terms of the order of the Yerusha, you don't need the psukim. Could have just written, the closest goes first, and that would have been enough information. The psukim are there to teach us other drashot that we're going to get to later in the perek. But as far as order is concerned, the overarching theme, or the overriding factor, is closest of kin. And therefore, the order of the psukim is not governing over here, but rather the limud that we have, which is that the father has to enter somewhere, and the father, since it's the chiddush that we're going to move him up, we have to move him up into a position where it's meaningful that he's mentioned here, that he is a yoter karov to someone that you wouldn't have otherwise thought. And we establish that that is between the son and the daughter and the brothers. Even though the brothers should have taken precedence because they step into the shoes of the deceased, nevertheless, we're going to give the father precedence because of the limud of the pasuk that moves him up and says that he is yoter karov to someone he shouldn't have been, and that is the brothers. We don't put him in front of the son and the daughter because the son and the daughter have the ultimate trump card, which is that with regards to Yibum, they obviate the need for Yibum, so they clearly precede the brothers of the deceased. And given that they step into the shoes of the deceased, therefore, they take precedence over the father. And so putting him in front of the brothers is enough not to have to put him all the way in front of the ben and the bat, because they have something which is the ultimate trump card in the prevention of Yibum and being what we consider to be the offspring of the individual to prevent anything else from happening. So too, by Nachala, they will take precedence. Or the truth is that you do need the pasuk to be out of order, and that might be what the Shloka Sidran is here, because the closing pasuk, it says, "V'natatem v'nachtato l'sheiro akarov elav v'mishpachto," also has a different meaning. It means that the closest of kin after this list will be the inheritor. So the pasuk has a dual meaning. One is to say that the father is an inheritor. The other one to say that the other relatives after those that listed here, the closest relative will be the inheritor. So that pasuk had to be at the end because of its meaning, bepashtut. But it also has a drusha aspect to it, which would bring it up in the order of the psukim. So by definition, the psukim had to be written out of order in order to have this pasuk have that dual meaning. But then once you know that there is this alternate meaning to it, and then you have to write it out of order to incorporate the other relatives, then we have to now know where to place the av, and that's not considered to be out of order. The psukim are really in order, but the drusha now demands that we do something. That drusha, we have to fit into the psukim, kisidran, the way that they are now, and make it fit between whichever parties make sense to put the father between to give a meaning to the drusha. Being before the uncles is not any meaning to that drusha, because that would follow the principle of akarov karov kodem. Then you must bump him up one level, and that puts him before the brothers of the deceased, though not before the children of the deceased. So that's the one version of how we get the order of Yerusha from the word Sheiro, teaching us about the father. We have another Tana that learns this same limud in a different way. The Tanya, we have a bright that Zul Dorash Rabishmo Rabbi Yossi, Ish Kiyamut Ubein Eino. When a person passes away and he has no son, in the place of the daughter, you take away the nachla from the father, but you're not going to move the nachla away from the father in the face of the brothers. So here, the Gemara here is darshaning the word havara, which is that the Torah, when it speaks about nachla, in all the psukim, it says, v'natatem, unetatem, unetatem. You will give the nachala to these people. The only exception to that is the verb used by the daughter, which is, v'avartem enachalato lebito. But you're going to move the nachala to his daughter. Havara makes it sound like you're taking it away from someone and giving it to someone else. Natatem means that whatever is coming their way will be given to them. Havarta means that something that should have gone to someone else is now being transferred to you. And so the way they darshan is that if it says, Havarta nachla tolu bito, that you're going to move the nachla to the daughter, it means that they're moving it away from someone else. Who is the someone else? That is the father. So the father would have been the one to take precedence over here. But instead, the Torah says, Havarta nachla tolu bito. You take it away from the father and you give it to the daughter. But that means that in the next pasuk, when it says, v'natatem enachtoto le'achav, you're going to give it to the achim then don't take precedence over the father. It's a given that the father would have gone first. The pasuk tells you, give the daughter instead of the father. But that means that after that, the father should go next before the brothers. Now, underlying this, which is interesting and difficult to understand, is that the Gemara automatically assumes that the father should have been first. That the father of the deceased would have been way up there in the list. He would have been the closest of kin, had it not been for this pasuk, v'avartem nachlato lebito. What's interesting is until now, we weren't even clear where the father should fit. In the previous limud, said, oh, the father gets nachala. Where does he fit in? Should he go before the brothers? Should he go before the children? Should he go after everyone? Where does he belong in that list? Because that's all we were trying to discover, is where the father belongs in the list. It wasn't obvious that the father goes first. In this limud, it is clear to the Gemara, or the way that the Braita is learning it, that the father for sure should be the first yoresh, or the first in line, had it not been from the Havara. So the Havara would bumps him down behind the daughter, but leaves him in front of the Achim, in front of the brothers. And here, you can see the Balei Tosfot discussing this in the way that the Rivam explains the Gemara. He says, Umuki la ba'av. They make it that it's the father that is the one taking precedence here. Fisha make you say your echo. Because the deceased is his offspring. There's no closer relative that would be more appropriate in this case. Va'afagab, even though dilokti vavartem, had it not been for the word vavartem, loiti mer sha'av karov, afilu minach, we would have bumped the father all the way down the list. He would only be in front of the uncles, but he wouldn't have taken precedence over the brothers of the deceased, the children of the deceased, because they all have roles in replacing the deceased. Mashma shim avrim and achalam makumarui mukila ba'av. Because of that vavartem, we need to put somebody in there, and the one that's the most appropriate is the father. So in Achanami, the Baal Tosafot recognized that there's a problem here, that why all of a sudden are you picking the father when the brothers and the children clearly have precedence over the father? So he says it's a derivative of the fact that the pasuk says vavartem, which means we're taking the nachla from someone else and giving it to the daughter. So now, when you're giving it to the daughter, who are you taking it away from? All the other people that are possible are listed in the psukim. There's only one person left, and that is the father. And it makes sense that he's the one because he is the father of the deceased. There's no other kin that you would have included here that would make more sense than the father. Of course, the brothers and the children are, but they're mentioned explicitly in the psukim. So the Havara must reference to the father, even though, again, until now, we've assumed that we don't know where the father fits. It's not obvious where the father fits. Where it says, V'eima, b'makom bat, atam avir nachala min achim. Maybe you could say, or maybe we should suggest, that the way to read it is that the Havara of nachala is from the brothers to the daughter. V'yata mavir nachala min av, afilu b'makom bat. And you will not move away the nachla from the father, even in the face of a daughter. So, in that case, what the Gemara is saying is that the Havarat Nachala is referencing the order in the Psukim. You would have thought, Ben goes first, son goes first, then Achim, then the brothers, because again, the brothers have a relationship of filling in the shoes of the deceased. So the order would have been son, brothers, then daughter. The pasuk comes to tell you, "Vavartem inachlato lebito," give the daughter before the brothers. So that would be the way to interpret the pasuk, that the precedence that's given to the daughter is because the brothers should have really gone first. And the Avarat Nachala is now giving precedence to the daughter over the brothers, but then that would imply that the father would go first, no matter what, meaning that the father would precede even the bat in this case, because the father is the closest of kin. Or the way that the Tosavot suggest, you could have done the drasha like this. In the face of a daughter, you take away nachala from the brothers. But you don't take away from the brothers in the face of the father. And therefore the brothers should go before the father. You could have brought the drasha in that same manner. But because of the context of the Braita, the Av Chashuv Yoter Mikulam Nasiv, where the father is considered to be the top of the chain over here, that's how the Braita lists it out or tries to explain it, even though you could have, again, made a drasha that would have put the father behind the brothers by simply saying that the Havara was from the brothers to the daughter, and then the brothers come, but that means that the brothers and the daughter would take precedence over the father. So therefore, it made an alternate drusha that would put the father at the top of the chain, rather than putting an alternate drusha that would put the father below the daughter and the brothers. Or you could say, like the Havamina of the Baal Yeh Tosafot, that's the Gemara's question over here. Why don't we make the order now that the daughter goes before the brothers, and then the brothers go before the father? And then all the psukim would be in order, and you wouldn't have to upend that order. But either way, we have a problem now, because the drusha has alternative ways to be looked at, and in those cases, it won't result in the order that we're looking for, which is bat, father, ach. Where it says, im kein lo nechtov rachmana vavartem. If that was the case, you don't need to write the word vavartem, because the pasuk, by definition, gives you the order. It says ben, bat, ach. The psukim give you that order. You don't need to tell me havara, that the bat shouldn't have gotten before the brothers, but she does. It doesn't need to say vavara, because it says that the daughter goes before the brothers. That's a given in the order of the psukim. And since according to this Tana, the psukim are in order in that way, it should just said, unatatem et nachlato lebito. You give the nachla to the daughter, and then you give the nachla to the brothers. And as the Baal Yeh Tosafot explained over here, that there's no real havara now, because the order of the psukim, but more importantly, the bat should, by definition, precede the brothers, as we already indicated that the daughter is a closer kin than the brothers because of her ability to obviate the need for Ibum, then she's considered to be a closer relative than the brothers. So then you don't need to use the word Havara, because this would have been the natural order, and you should have used the word Netatem. Or, again, like we said, the order of the psukim would have been definitive, and therefore you don't need the word havara. Havara indicates that there's some unspoken change over here that's not included in the psukim. Now that it writes the word vavartem, that already gives you a reason to believe that there is someone else that's involved here, and that is the father. And that means that the avarat nachala means that the daughter is taking precedence over the father who should have gotten that nachala. Not the brothers. Maybe the brothers should have gotten the nachala, but the Supreme already laid that out, that the brothers come after the daughter. So who else could be subordinated to the daughters? That's only one left, is the father. And therefore the order will be ben, bat, father, brothers, uncles. And then akarov kodem, after that, the closest of kin. Now this makes it even more problematic in the question, because now there's an underlying assumption that the father should go first no matter what, even without a limud from the word havara. So the Rashbam just describes the fact that we would say that the father goes before the bat, because logically the father is closer, even though that has not been our premise until this point in time. In order to deal with that issue, the Rosh Mishan, over here, says that v'natatem et nachlato lebito, had it written that, that also would have been unnecessary to write it, because we already had before that which is found at the end of Sefer Bamidbar with regards to Benot Tzavchad, that it says, v'chol bat, yorushin nachalami matot b'nei Yisrael. So you would know from that a daughter is an inheritor. You don't need to write it at all. So then, if you had written v'natatem and not v'avartem, you would have said, v'natatem enachlato lebito, that's coming to teach you that the bat goes before the achim, but not before the father. The father, based on the assumption in this whole sugi over here, is that the father goes first. So v'natatem et nachlato lebito would teach you that the bat goes before the ach, but not from the front of the father. The extraneous v'avartem tells you now that the bat even precedes the father. So in both cases, you need a pasuk to tell you that the father will go first, but the nature of the pasuk teaches you different things. If you wrote netatem and achto lebito, which is extraneous, it would come to teach you that she precedes the brother, not the father. On the other hand, when you put in vavartem, it means that she then trumps the father as well. And that's what the drush is from vavartem and not v'nachlatem. So that's what the Rosh Mishnatz says in the Balei HaTosafot to answer how it is that the av gets to the front of the line if you don't have the drush of vavartem and nachlato. Right, so now the Gemara says, the one who learns it out, this bright to hear, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, who learns out the fact that the father is between the children and the brothers of the deceased, what does he do with Haishero Ma'avidli? What does he do with the word She'ero, which was the limud for the first drasha? Mibayile Dekdanya, he needs it for this brighta, She'ero Zoishto. The closest of kin, or She'ero, refers to his wife. From this you learn out that the husband inherits his wife. Now even though the pasuk is written in the opposite direction, which is v'natatem et nachlato l'she'ero, says he will give his inheritance l'she'ero, to his she'ero, the Rashbam points out that they are what's called gorin u'mosifin. They move around the letters and they make it so that the pasuk means something else, which is v'natatem et nachalat she'ero, you will give the nachala of his wife lo. So instead of it being nachalato, which is a nachala shelo, to his she'er, they're going to read the pasuk like this: v'natatem et nachala she'ero. They're going to take the nachala of the closest of kin, the wife, and they're not them lo. You're going to give it to him. And that might be enhanced by the continuation of the pasuk that says ve'arashuta, that he will inherit her, rather than referring to ve'arashuta, he will inherit the nachala. And so that enhances this idea that it's referencing that he is inheriting her, rather than what the simple reading of the pasuk seems to indicate, which would be the opposite. So that's what he'll do with the word she'ero. And the first limo that we had, where we learned out that the father takes precedence on the brothers, from the word she'ero, hai vavartem mai ovidei. What does he do with the word vavartem? Miboyelei b'ketanya. He needs it for this brayta. Rabbi Omer b'kulan ne'emar b'hen netina, v'kan ne'emar b'hen havara. In all the other nachalot, it says you will give it to them. Over here it says you will transfer it to them. Havara, it will be moved. She'en lecha she'mavir nachala mishevet deshevet elabat, hoyel ubina ubala yorshim otah. Because the only one who causes Nachala to move from a Shevet to another Shevet is a daughter who inherits. Because the daughter inherits, the inheritors of that daughter are her husband and her son. So from this you would learn out that the son inherits his mother, and the son inheriting his mother, who is bound by the Shevet of his father, or his father's family, the Nachala now will move from the family of the daughter to the family of her husband, or the family of her son, which is obviously the family of her husband. And so that's what it says. Vavara means that the daughter causes the transference of Nachala between families or between Shvatim, because when she marries, if she's an inheritor, whatever she inherits will then move over to her husband's family. So that's what we learn out from the word Havara. Umimai de'sheiro ze'av. So now the Gemara backtracks and says, according to the one who says that she'iro teaches that the father goes before the brothers, how does he even know the word she'iro means father? Dichti, because it says in Parshat Arayot, she'er avichahi. Again, there it's talking about Arayot. In the context it is speaking about, it's saying that the sister of the father, your aunt, is off limits because she'er avichahi, because she is a relative of your father, an extension of your father. Now, the pasuk is somewhat extraneous because everything in that parsha is because of she'er. So they learn from the extraneous nature of she'er avichai, it's coming to give you the definition of she'er. Ema she'ero zo'aim. Why don't you say then, if that's this lima that you're using, in the parshat Arayot, it also says that she'er with regards to the mother, dichtiv, she'er imchahi. Because it says she is the relative or the kin of your mother. So the word she'er can reference to father, but it's she'er can also reference to mother. Amarav Amakra, the pasuk says, Mimishpachto Beyarash Ota, that from his family you will inherit it. Mimishpachat Av Kriya Mishpacha. So the pasuk says, Natatem Nachtato the She'ero Akarov Elav, Mimishpachto, from his family, Beyarash Ota, and he will inherit it. So the inheritance goes through the family. Mishpachat Av Kriya Mishpacha, the father's family is called family. Mishpachat Eim Eina Kriya Mishpacha. On the other hand, the family of the mother is not called Mishpacha. Dichtiv Lim Mishpichotam Levet Ovutam. In the counting of the Shvatim, or the census that's done in the Midbar, the way that you are determined as to what Shevet you belong to is Mishpachotam Levet Ovutam, based on the fathers, the Yichus is passed through the fathers. So now, based on that, the truth is that the word she'er could have meant mother, it could have meant father. But now that we know that it says mi mishpachto, it's talking about mishpacha, and mishpacha is only relevant on the father's side, now we know that the word she'er in this context means father and not mother. It had a choice, it could have been one of the two. In the end, it is father because of the context. The mishpachto teaches us that father's family is the only family, mother's family is not classified as family. Now the Gemara is going to challenge that. Mishpachat Eim, Eina Kriya Mishpacha. Is it really true that the mother's family has no relevance with regards to the yichus or the familial connection of the individual of Aktiv? Then we have a pasuk in the story of Pesel Micha that says, Vayi Na'ar Mibeit Lechem Yehuda. There was this young lad from Beit Lechem in Yehuda, Mishpachat Yehuda, from the family of Yehuda, Vehu Levi. And he was a Levi. Vehu Gar Sham. And he lived there. How is it possible that the pasuk describes him as being mimishpachat Yehuda, and also describes him as being a Levi? Amarat v'hu Levi. Alma mi Levi atim. If he's a Levi, then he comes from Shevet Levi, not from Shevet Yehuda. Mimishpachat Yehuda, but it says he's from the family of Yehuda. Alma mi Yehuda atim. So it means that he came from Yehuda. Elalav. So what is the conclusion, or how do we understand that? Da'avua mi Levi. His father is from Levi, that's why he's a Levi. He can't learn it the other way around. If his mother's from Levi, he wouldn't be a Levi. The only way he can be a Levi is if his father's a Levi. So his father was a Levi, v'imei mi'yuda. And his mother was from Shevet Yehuda, v'kamar mi'mishpachat Yehuda. Despite the fact that it was his mother that was from Yehuda, it still identifies him as being from the family of Yehuda. So he is a product of a mixed Shevet marriage, which is the father is from Levi, the mother is from Yehuda. But when it identifies him by both families. It identifies him being from Yehuda. Also identifies him as being from Levi. Amarova by Rav Chanan. Lo, that's not the way to understand it. Gavro de Shmei Levi. His name was Levi. He was from Mishpachat Yehuda, meaning that his father was from Yehuda, but his name was Levi. Iochi Hanu Dekamar Micha. If that's the case, how can you explain what Micha says? When Micha co-opts him to be the Kohen to his Pesel, he says about this young lad, Atah Yadati Ki Yetiv Hashem Li. Now I know that God will be good to me. Kayali HaLevi the Kohen. Because now I have taken someone from Shevet Levi and made him into a Kohen. So he thought, I've gotten someone who is part of the Shevet that is consecrated to Hashem, the Levi'im, who are in the service of Hashem, and now I have brought him in to be my Kohen and to be in my service. So he sees that as being propitious that he had gotten somebody, a Levi, to be his Kohen. But that would imply that he really is a Levi, not someone with the name Levi. In the Dramale Gavro, Dishmei Levi. No, Enochanami. That's what he meant. That it was good luck or it was a good sign that he found someone whose name was Levi. Not necessarily that he was a Levi, but the fact that his name was Levi was a good omen, because then he would serve as the Kohen, even though his name was Levi. You might even, or you could possibly even read it, that the people would have thought he was a Levi because his name was Levi. And so he saw it in that a good sign to make him into a Kohen. Where it says, Bechi Levi Shemo? Was Levi really his name? Hello, Yehonatan Shemo. Isn't his name Yehonatan? Shnemar. Because it says later on, V'Yonatan Ben Gershom Ben Menashe, Hu Banav Ayu Kohanim L'Shevet Adani. Later on, when the Shevet Dan travels north because of the difficulty they're having down here in the center of the country conquering the area that is their Nachala, then half the Shevet takes off and moves up to the north to what we know today as Tel Dan. And then they establish a new beachhead for their Shevet, or half their Shevet, up in the north. On their way up, they pass by Pesel Micha, and they co-opt the Pesel and the Kohen with them, and they take him up. And it says that this individual, and it names the individual who was working there, its name is Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. Hu banav ayu kohanim l'shevet adani. You're telling me now his name is Levi? His name is explicit in the Pasuk that it was Yonatan. So, Amalei, ule tameich. According to your reasoning, v'chi ben Menashehu? Hello, ben Mosheu. Wait a minute. You think that his name is ben Menashe? He really was ben Moshe. Dichti b'nei Moshe Gershom ve'Eliezer. Because the Pasuk says that the children of Moshe were Gershom and Eliezer. You don't need a Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim to teach you that. You could have known that from the Psukim in the Torah, that Moshe's children's names are Gershom and Eliezer. But it brings it from that Pasuk, because Chazal Darshan from there, that this Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe was really ben Moshe. Even though the name Yonatan does not appear in those Psukim, Chazal associate the lineage there of the son of Gershom to be synonymous with this individual of Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. Elamitoch shasa masse Menashe, but because he acted like Menashe, who was the quintessential paradigmatic Oved Avodah Zarah, one who corrupted the kingdom and made it into a kingdom of Avodah Zarah, Tlo HaKatuv Menashe. The Pasuk tied him to Menashe. So his name is not really Menashe, meaning that it's Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe. So now his grandson of Moshe is this Kohen that ends up being a Kohen Avodah Zarah. And it names him as Menashe. The truth is that the Pasuk, when it says Menashe, there's a Nun Tluya there. There's a Nun that is not in line with the rest of the letters, but is pulled out of the line of the rest of the letters, almost to indicate that the letter Nun doesn't belong there. And from that, Chazal Darshan, that it's Bnei Moshe, that it was Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe. The Pasuk went out of its way to hide the fact that this was a grandson of Moshe who was involved in this activity, and therefore it writes it as Menashe. The Gemara over here says, it actually a play on the words. The Nun Atluya is because its pasuk was tole the sin with Menashe. Since Menashe becomes the paradigmatic individual for representing people who have worshiped Avodah Zarah, or have taken people away from the worship of Hashem towards Avodah Zarah, anytime you talk about someone who's worshiping Avodah Zarah in that way, you say, like Menashe. And that's a similar thing that we do many times. When you have a paradigmatic type of individual, then you compare someone to that individual. So when you want to talk about someone who is involved in heinous crimes and crimes against humanity, it's misused and abused today, but you compare them to Hitler because of the way that he acted. He becomes that paradigm of someone acts in that way. So same way, Menashe is that paradigm, and therefore they call him Menashe. So what we're showing you here is that the names in the Pasuk aren't necessarily reflective of the real name of the individual. They are there for the drusha. Achanami mitok she'aseh maseh Menashe da'atim Yehuda, t'lo akatuv bi'Yehuda. So too over here, he really wasn't from the family of Yehuda, but because he did the activities of Menashe, we connect his lineage to Menashe. And just like he did the Maseh, Menashe is a king of Yehuda, and Yehuda then is led into this worship of Avodah Zarah. So too, when they spoke about his mishpacha, his family, it doesn't literally mean that is his family, but his family of Yehuda, meaning that he's from those people that go and worship Avodah Zarah. As opposed to Levi, who's known for their insistence or kana'ut Hashem in fighting against Avodah Zarah. So they are miyaches him into Yehuda, not because necessarily he was from the family of Yehuda, but because his actions or activities were like that of Yehuda. And therefore, and in the end, you can say that he was a Levi, meaning that he really was a Levi. His name is Yonatan. And why it says Shevet Yehuda is not because he literally was from Shevet Yehuda, and not that his mother was from Yehuda, but rather because he acted in the way of the people of Yehuda. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mishin Rabbi Shim Bar Yochai Mikan, Shetolim Et Akilkalah BeMikulkal. This is the precedent for the fact that you connect some sort of problem to the problematic. That if you assume that something bad is happening, we assign that bad either to someone who represents or is a paradigm of that bad, or when something goes wrong, we automatically associate it with that individual. So if there's an individual that's known for doing certain bad things or engaging in certain bad activity, then whenever that activity happens, we're automatically going to assume that it was that individual. Even though we have no knowledge, even though we don't know it was them, we would associate it with them automatically because they've already gained a name or notoriety for doing things that are negative. And so then we associate any negative behavior or results to that individual who represents that negative trait. And so similarly, anytime we have something bad, we connect it to someone's bad, and I would say it the same way in the positive sense. That when there's something good, we connect it to those that are good. Just like when we give a bracha, it says, B'chal yivorach Yisrael, that through you, everybody will give a bracha. And that's what we say, Yisimcha galukim ke'efrayim milchum Menashe. Or for a girl, we say, Yisimeich k'sar rivka rachel v'leya. We look at paradigmatic individuals to give the bracha through. We associate the good with the good, and we're going to associate the negative with the people who represent that negative or evil. Yosi v'rachin amar miyocha. We learn it out from here, that lesson. V'gamu tov toar ma'od. He was also very good looking. And he was next in line in terms of the children of David HaMelech after Avshalom. Here it's describing in the beginning of Malachim about Adoniah ben Chagit. Adoniah was about to lead in rebellion against David HaMelech, against Shlomo taking over as the king. And he's next in line in terms of the heir to the crown because the older brothers already been taken out. Amnon was killed by Avshalom. Avshalom already led a rebellion and was killed by Yoav. So next in line is Adoniah. And it says about Adoniah that he was tov tawar ma'od, that he was really good looking, v'oto yaldach harei Avshalom. And he was born after Avshalom, implying that he and Avshalom shared a common parent, a common mother. Because it says, oto yaldah, that she gave birth to after Avshalom. V'lo Adoniah ben Chagit v'Avshalom ben Ma'acha. Aren't Adoniah and Avshalom brothers through the father? They're half-brothers, but don't have the same mother. Adoniah's mother is Chagit, and Avshalom's mother is Ma'acha. So then why is the Pasuk in the Navi ascribing to the fact that Adoniah is born to her after Avshalom? So the answer the Gemara says is, El mitok she'aseh maseh Avshalom, since he mimicked the behavior of Avshalom, demarad b'malchut, that he rebelled against the king, he led an insurrection, t'lo akatuv Avshalom. Therefore, the Navi associates him with Avshalom. So even though he wasn't really Avshalom's full brother, nevertheless, the Torah makes him into his brother in order to associate the behavior of Adoniah with Avshalom. And so again, he calls him or connects him or makes him familiarly connected to Avshalom because of his behavior that mimicked or imitated that which Avshalom had done. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Lo'olam yidbak adam b'tovim. Person should always marry with good yichus, or individuals who are good. Shrei Moshe shenasa bat Yitro. Moshe, who married the daughter of Yitro, yatsa mimenu Yonatan. Issued forth from him, Yonatan. So what we're saying now is that Yonatan, who is a grandson of Moshe, the reason that he went off the derech, the reason that he was involved in all these negative activities, is because Moshe Rabbeinu married the daughter of Yitro. Now, even though Yitro himself did tshuva, and Yitro himself became an Ovid Hashem, nevertheless, he started out as a Komer the Avodah Zarah, priest to Avodah Zarah, and that had residual impact on the descendants of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why Yonatan, his grandson, was someone who deviated to Avodah Zarah because of the fact that his grandmother was the daughter of Yitro. Aaron shenasa bat Aminadav. Then Aaron, who married Nachshon ben Aminadav's sister, Elisheva bat Aminadav, yatzah mimenu Pinchas. Out of him came his grandchild, was Pinchas. So if you're comparing grandchildren, Moshe's grandchild is Yonatan, who ends up being an Ovid of Avodah Zarah, and Aaron's grandchild ends up being Pinchas, who's a Kanai Lashem, and kills people who act inappropriately. I says, Pinchas, lav Yitro ati? Wait a minute, I don't know if this dress is so good, because Pinchas is also a descendant of Yitro, of Aktiv. Pasuk says, Elazar ben Aaron lekach lo mibnot p'tiel lo l'isha. So it says that Elazar ben Aaron a Kohen, the son of Aaron, marries Benot Putiel, the daughters of Putiel. Because you have to say the word Putiel is for a drusha and not some name, because otherwise the Torah should have given us some definition as to who this Putiel is. Like by Elisheva bat Aminadav, Achot Nafshon, she's the sister of Nafshon. So we have context, we understand who she is. But all of a sudden to say that he took a wife, Benot Putiel, without giving us any information as to what Putiel means, that's indicative of the fact that it's not literally the name of the individual, but rather it's open for some sort of drosha as to what the yichus of this woman was. My love, why are they called Benot Putiel? De'ate mi'Yitro, because they were descendants of Yitro, they were from Yitro, shepitem agalim la'avodah zarah, who fattened up calves for Avodah Zarah. Meaning that he was a worshipper of Avodah Zarah. Lo, Putiel doesn't have to come from the word pitain, that he fattened up cows, meaning that he offered korbanot to Avodah Zarah. El da'ati mi'Yosef. Comes from Yosef, shepitpeit bi'Yitzro, who was able to defend against the onslaught of his Yetzer, and he was able to overcome the temptation that was presented to him from Eshet Potiphar. So that's where the word Putiel comes from, the word pitpeit, to protect, defend, or fight against the Yetzer Hara. But lo, don't we have a midrash shashvatim mevazim oto, that the shvatim were denigrating Pinchas? V'omrim, ri'item ben puti zeh, ben shepitem avi imo agalim la'avodah zarah? Did you see this guy whose grandfather was a worshipper of Avodah Zarah? Yarog nasi shevet Yisrael? He has the gumption, the gall, to kill a prince amongst Klal Yisrael? How could it be? How could it be that someone with such a lowly yichus could go ahead and kill someone with such a high yichus? So you see clearly that Pinchas is associated with Yitro. So then how does your drasha work here? Pinchas is a grandson of Aaron, but he's also a grandson of Yitro. And then when we look at Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to say, wait a minute, Yonatan is a grandson of Moshe, he's a great grandson of Yitro. So if that's the case, what's your proof now? Pinchas, first of all, is closer of kin to Yitro. He's a grandson, according to this, of Yitro. Whereas Yonatan was a great-grandson of Yitro. And you're telling us, well, because Moshe married Bat Yitro, that was the negative. Elazar also married a Bat Yitro, and that turned out to be positive. So it says, Ela I avua di meimi Yosef, ima di meimi Yitro. So the answer is that Pinchas was descended both from Yosef and from Yitro. His mother's father was from Yosef, and his mother's mother was from Yitro. Or his mother's father was from Yitro, Yosef. And then his mother's mother was from Yosef. Dekanami, I can prove to you that that's the case. Dichtib mibnot putiel. Tarte shmamina. Because it says from mibnot putiel, which is the plural, therefore it means two. What the plurality is over here is not clear. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom writes it is, Dikhtiv Putiel Male. It writes Putiel Male with the Yud in it. Shnei Putiel, the Poti Mashma Tarte. Because Poti means two, mi Yosefu Mitro. Ve'it demapkile mi banot Putiel. Doesn't say bat Putiel, but rather mi banot Putiel, the daughters of Putiel. And therefore he sees that as being the plurality that says that there are two individuals here. Now there's a major problem in the solution of the Gemara. The solution of the Gemara is to say that Pinchas's mother, Elazar's wife, and that means that Pinchas's mother's mother, or mother's father was from Yosef or Yitro, depending which way, it's either the mother's father or the mother's mother. But once you do that, so now you pushed it back one generation, we still have a problem now. Because if we look at Yonatan, Yonatan is the son of Gershom, who is the son of Moshe, who's married to Tzipora bat Yitro. Yitro is his father-in-law. That means that Yonatan is the great-grandson of Yitro. The way that we've explained it now, the same would be true for Pinchas. Pinchas's mother is Mibnot Putiel. And then we say that the mother of the wife of Elazar, she was, either her father was from Yosef, or her mother was from Yitro, or her mother was from Yitro, and her father was from Yosef. If that's the case, then Pinchas also is a great-grandson of Yitro. Because Pinchas's mother is the Benot Putiel. His mother's mother was the daughter of Yitro, as well as the daughter of Yosef. So once you've done that, now Pinchas has a great-grandfather who is Yitro. His mother's mother is a daughter of Yitro. That's the case. He's also a great-grandson of Yitro. So now what have you proved to me? You say to me, you have Pinchas, who is a great-grandson of Yitro, great person. You have Yonatan, who is a great-grandson of Yitro, and a bad person. What do you prove to me? So here the Balei Tosfot answer the question and say, it's different because Pinchas' relationship to Yitro came through his mother, whereas Yonatan's relationship with Yitro came through his father. And so Gershom, who is the child of Bat Yitro, comes from the father's side of the family. Therefore, it has more impact on him, and that's the negativity over here. On the other hand, for Pinchas, it was his mother's side. His father was Elazar, his mother was the daughter of Yitro. And therefore, since it came through the mother's lineage, it's not as impactful. On the other hand, the Rashbam deals with the issue and says, Kanon mibanav shel Yitro umibnei banav. It's referencing Aima shel Ein Pinchas Kai. It's not talking about the mother of Pinchas, but the mother of the mother, his grandmother of Pinchas. She was a descendant from Bat Yitro, and that's why he extends it one more generation and says that he wasn't the great-grandson of Yitro, but he was the great-great-grandson of Yitro. And then by extending it one generation, that's how he differentiates that Pinchas was much further away from Yitro, and therefore he had a cleaner slate, we'll call it. And that's why he turned out well, because he had Aaron on the other side, which was the positive influence, versus Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe, who was a great-grandson of Yitro, and his closeness to that of Yitro, without the offsetting factor, that's what made him into Yonatan, or negative, and that's what the Gemara is noting over here. Okay, I'm going to stop here, four lines down on the top of Kuf Yud Amud Aleph.